Are you a thrifter? Someone who enjoys the sights, sounds, and scents of sifting through society's cast-offs to find the hidden treasures? You found the thrift shop of the airwaves, where 78s, 45s, cassettes, and LPs are spinning on the stereo just for you.
California melodies out of the West to you.
Well, if you think you've stumbled upon some high radio weirdness, indeed you have. This is DJ Frederick with the Radio Thrift Shop right here on WSCS 90.9 FM in New London every Saturday evening from 10 p.m. until midnight. Also available on your smartphone, your tablet, and your computer at classicalwscs.org. Now, each week I spin an eclectic playlist from the last 100 years of recorded sound, so you never know what you're going to hear, and it's never the same program twice. I'm going to start today's program off with some music from Bruce Cockburn from his LP Salt, Sun, and Time.
Thank you.
Well, you might be forgiven for thinking that is Mike Oldfield and band live, but no, that is Fadillac, which is a tribute band to Mike Oldfield, and that was Amandon Part 1. Before that, we heard Jay Taussig with Thick as a Brick, and we started that set off with Bruce Coburn, Seeds on the Wind. Well, this is DJ Frederick, and coming up next on the Radio Thrift Shop, we have a documentary about jazz and the Cold War from Shortwaveology, so please stay tuned.
And now, another film rental discovery. But first,
Indie Film Minute is proud to support World Kidney Day. Every year, thousands of events are organized all over the world to celebrate World Kidney Day and spread the word about kidney health. More information is available at worldkidneyday.org.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. When we say that a movie haunts us, we usually mean that there's some specific message that sticks with us, or there's a scene we can't stop thinking about. But in Victor Erice's classic, The Spirit of the Beehive, a young girl believes that the spirit of Frankenstein's monster has followed her off the screen into her own world. Convinced that he's now living in a nearby well, she makes frequent treks across the Castilian Plateau to try to catch a glimpse of him. To say that Anna is haunted is only part of the story. Her rich and often eerie imagination is subtly set against the backdrop of the Spanish Civil War. If this sounds like a familiar plot to you, that's because it is. This small film inspired Guillermo del Toro's magical realist tour de force, Pan's Labyrinth, another IFM pick. But while Pan's Labyrinth relies on extravagant sets and characters, The Spirit of the Beehive is much more suggestive than theatrical. It manages to capture Anna's sense of wonder, for instance, with simple shots of her powerful young eyes. Only in one final magical scene do we realize that the spell has been just as richly cast. And what a spell it is. The Spirit of the Beehive, not in theaters. Discovery through rental. Visit us at IndieFilmMinute.com to share your thoughts, suggest films, or even to submit your own review.
Do you love scratchy old 45s? Discovering rare LPs? Listening to an 8-track tape or a cassette? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Radio Thrift Shop with DJ Frederick.
Time for jazz. Willis Conover in Washington, D.C. with the Voice of America Jazz Hour.
A lot of jazz music had been played on the Voice of America program, Willis Conover. And through those programs, whole world, particularly Eastern Europe, learned about jazz music. In reality, up until late 80s, it was not officially forbidden, but you were like almost like marked. He's interested in jazz. With Western culture, he's potentially enemy of the state.
The story of the Mulligan Quartet is told by Richard Bach, an important figure in the history of that group, from whose comments we quote on tonight's program.
Armed with only his deep, resonant voice and slow, careful enunciation, Willis Conover lobbed a daily program of jazz over the Iron Curtain and into the forbidden territory of Eastern Europe, with an assist from the noisy and unpredictable yet far-reaching medium of shortwave radio. During the thick of the Cold War, many Western countries used shortwave signals to cross the otherwise closed borders of communist countries to deliver another side of the news and a taste of Western culture. I'm David Gorin, and this is Jazz Stories from Jazz and Lincoln Center. On this edition, we'll hear from two of the many musicians that lived under a communist regime and discovered jazz via Willis Conover's program on The Voice of America.
When I was studying at the conservatory in Prague, about midnight, Willis Conover, Voice of America, he had about an hour jazz program, and he played the latest stuff, you know, Miles, Coltrane, Bill Evans, and so on.
Czech bassist George Mraz first tuned in during the early 1960s.
And then in 1964, there was a jazz festival in Prague, and Willis and Carol Canover were present, and so that's when I met him. I remember he got a 10-minute standing ovation, you know, because everybody knew who he was.
The strength, the beauty of this music, basically that's what moved me from my home country to America.
Jazz trumpeter Valery Ponomarev's journey began in Moscow in 1961 when a fellow musician hit the play button on his tape recorder.
I was playing already like in the dance band, and a friend of mine in the dance band said, "Val, I heard something on the radio. I recorded something of the short band radio yesterday. It's incredible. Val, come listen to it tomorrow. I'm knowing you, I'm sure you'll just totally love it." Okay, so I come to his house next day, and I remember it like it's just happened now. I was on the subway and what's not, how I found his house and went upstairs and knocked on the door, and it was 9 a.m. And my friend, I opened the door, and my friend still sitting on the bed. No hello, no good morning, nothing. He just stretched his hand to his tape recorder and pushed the button. And out came... I was totally shocked. You know, it's a blues walk by Clifford Brown, performed by Clifford Brown, Max Roach, Incorporated Quintet. I was totally shocked. I was totally, like, knocked off my feet. Then he told me what it was, and that was it. That was my introduction to jazz music. That moment, I realized there is nothing musically for me except this music. That had to be it. You know, I had to learn to play like that and so on and so forth. And I just instantly understood it. My whole body, my whole being, all of a sudden opened up to it, said, "This is it, this is your music, that's what you were supposed to be doing musically. Nothing else would have been it." So through the radio, I got me a lot of music.
The Voice of America's English language broadcasts to the Soviet Union were not commonly jammed by the government, but listening was not without risk.
I don't think any place that was absolutely expressly forbidden to listen to jazz.
Kim Andrew Elliott is an audience research analyst for the United States International Broadcasting Bureau.
But I think it was probably discouraged, and perhaps if you wanted to move up career-wise, it's not something you would want people to know that you were listening to.
Every Russian Soviet Moscow citizen would have been secretive about it, because you're listening to the Western program, you know, in the middle of the communist heaven. I wasn't really secretive, but simply because I was a kid, you know, I didn't know the theory yet. But anybody who listened on a regular basis to Voice of America would have been secretive about it, because it's just not a good thing for neighbors, for example, to tell on you that, "Oh, you know what, that guy is listening to Voice of America." But also, I have to say this, that programs were jammed only when the latest news were delivered in Russian or English language. When music started, they simply couldn't afford to jam the station. But they didn't realize that music did the same thing what latest news would have done. Jazz music, more than any other form of art, makes a person free. Playing jazz music or listening to it, you don't have to adhere to Soviet laws. And those laws were so artificial, they're so brutal, so unnatural. Here, listening or playing, you could be yourself. You're free. You're free from that nonsense. After that initial shock, I was racing around Moscow like a bug-bitten puppy or something, running around looking for tapes. And the first one I found was Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, Moaning. That was it, you know, that's my love ever since. From that point, I was just like my friend who introduced me to Clifford Brown. In the morning, first thing when you wake up, press the button, and what you hear is pop, The strength, the beauty of this music, basically that's what moved me from my home country of Soviet Union then, but I still consider it Russia, to America, where I came to in 73. I escaped from then Soviet Union to see my heroes. Because by then, by 73, I was already grown a man. I already transcribed zillion of solos, a lot of Clifford Brown, a lot of Freddie Hubbard, Lee Morgan, Nat Adderley, Blue Mitchell, of course, Dizzy Gillespie and Coltrane and Charlie Parker and so on. But all of my heroes, they existed to me only in the sphere of sound. And then when I came to the United States, so finally I started to meet all my heroes in the flesh. And their sound finally merged with their appearance. And one day I met Art Blakey. It was at the now defunct Five Spot Club, Jazz Club. He was playing there with his quintet, with Art Blakey in the Jazz Messengers. And in the break, I came up to him. And before I even said anything, there was already like big crowd of people around him. And somebody from the crowd said, "Hey, Art, look at this guy. He's real Russian. He plays like Clifford Brown." he looked at me. I would never forget that look. I mean, this scene is just like it's happening now. You know, he stands in front of me and his eyes really recognized me. He knew I was not a joke. He asked me, "Who are you?" I said, "I'm a trumpet player from Moscow." "Where's your trumpet?" I say, "Oh, it's at home. I'll bring it tomorrow." "We'll talk to you then." That's what he said. And split and just left. When I came with the horn, he looked at me. And I knew instantly, he knew who I was. I was a messenger from Russia. He knew it then.
At the end of the set that night, Ponomarev and a new drummer in town, Jimmy Lovelace, sat in with the messengers. After they started playing, Ponomarev felt a shift in the rhythm.
But all of a sudden, I heard stumbling in the rhythm section. One stumble, another one, and I musically asked the question, "What's going on?" Boom! And then all of a sudden, glorious time, glorious rhythm established itself. And I already knew instantly what happened. And I was just, "Am I okay?" And musically, he answers me, "You are right." Like, I play, da-da-da-da, and he goes with drums. I ask again, da-da-da-da-da. He goes, da-da-da-da. And I ask again, "Am I initiated? Am I one of the guys? Am I this and that?" And he answers me very, very affirmatively. Da-da-boom, 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 like that. We talked. We literally talked. And man, after that, I just flew. I don't know where my soul went. I was not there physically anymore. And then after that, in total shock, I was standing on the floor. I don't even remember how I packed my horn in the case. And here was Art. He hugged me so hard, I could break away from him. And my new shirt I bought for the event, you know, for the occasion, was totally messed up because Art, after three sets of drumming, he's sweating like if he boxed for 15 rounds or something. And I still remember it, like, above my ear. He was slightly taller than me. Above my ear, "You'll be playing in my band, you'll be playing in my band."
Not long after, Valery Ponomarev joined Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers for 4 years and played on 11 albums. Ponomarev credits Willis Conover's radio program for setting his journey to America in motion and for changing his life by tuning his ear for jazz.
We got to really pay tribute to Willis Conover because later I found out that he had to really fight for integrity of his program, for pureness of it. And only later I found out that there were many, many occasions when someone tried to push into his programs what he didn't consider jazz or what's not up to the standards. And only then I realized, Jesus, if not for Willis Conover, we probably would have been listening to some nonsense you know, don't want to like start naming names, you know, equals to nonsense of today, you know what I mean?
That's Valeri Ponomarev talking about jazz broadcaster Willis Conover. Conover died in 1996 at the age of 75. At the time of his death, Jazz Hour had been on the air for over 40 years and had outlasted the communist regimes of Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union. You can hear Valeri Ponomarev perform with the Igor Bootman Big Band at jalc.org/jazzcast. You can also find all of our Jazz Stories podcasts there and on iTunes. Thanks also to bassist George Mraz. Jazz Stories is produced at Murray Street by myself, David Gorin, Alexa Lim, and Steve Rath, with support from Jazz at Lincoln Center. Consider becoming a member, or join us for a live performance. More at jalc.org. I'm David Gorin.
Well, digging deep into the thrift shop here with 101 strings, California Dreamin'. I'm DJ Frederick saying thank you for listening to the Radio Thrift Shop here on WSCS and online at classicalwscs.org. I'm celebrating 18 years on the airwaves here at 90.9. And let's see, counting them up. Oh, yeah, 42 going on 43 years since I stepped into the radio booth at WUNH back in the day. Fired up the turntable and played Tubular Bells. Well, remember, wherever you are on the planet, take good care of yourself. Take good care of your community and all those that you deem to be your community. And take good care of those you love.